Another week, another NBA sound system. Gil McGregor joined again by my guy, Kyle Irving. Kyle, what's up, man?
Not much. Again, no six man of the year intro or anything like that. I know we're going to be talking awards later on, but that's going to take some getting used to, just being a regular voice on the pod now.
It's funny. I was going to say, as always, joined by Kyle Irving, but I feel like we got to like get like three or four more under our belt before I say as always, but then we'll get there. It's funny because like all like the introduction stuff, it always feels like we say stuff like, oh man, like the season's like finally here, like the off season, but whatever, like this time next week will be like fully entrenched in like a full slate of NBA basketball, which is crazy to think. But it's here.
Yeah. I mean, you and I talked about it like at some point this summer, but this feels like this has been the first full real off season we've had, like really since the COVID year. Just because, you know, the COVID like shortened season, they ended up going like long into the summer, and then they started what, on like Christmas the following year. And yep. Then it was a shorter year. It was the shortest off season in I think US professional sports history or something like that. Then we had, you know, the Olympics one summer. I mean, we had Eurobasket last year and FIBA to hold us over this year. But for whatever reason, this felt like the most genuine, longest offseason that we've had in, you know, the 6 years you and I have been covering the sport together.
It's funny you said that, because I was going to say, man, it's felt like a long offseason, even with the World Cup in it. I think it's just like stuff was more spread out, right? Like the finals ended when they were supposed to. And I guess they ended when they were supposed to the year before as well. But like finals ended when they were supposed to. And then we kind of just took a deep breath. We had the draft and then took a deep breath. And like Wimby Mania died down for a little bit. And like there were a couple trades and stuff to tide us over. But I guess it was just like, I think, you know what it is? I feel like it's because there wasn't like any major like free agency like bombs that happened, you know, right? Like everybody kind of signed where we expected them to sign. And like there were the Porzingis deal, the Beal deal, whatever. But like ultimately we weren't like really like on our toes all free agency. Like Fred VanVleet was probably the biggest free agency movement this offseason. So like I think that kind of allowed us to take a deep breath between like free agency and like when the World Cup got going, and here we are.
Yeah, I kind of had a different reason for why it feels, you know, specifically longer for you and I, and that's because you're a Panthers fan and I'm a Patriots fan, and we're both already done with football, so we're kind of like, all right, let's just get to the real thing here. Let's get to basketball now.
I mean, you might as well have a spinoff podcast for like a support group for fans of football teams that are failing right now. But before we get into
basketball, is on the way. Basketball
is on the way. Exactly. And I don't know, like most Panther fans are probably Hornets fans and maybe they're excited. We'll talk about them in a little bit, but the Celtics definitely have a lot that most Patriots fans will be excited about. And there's a lot to talk about this upcoming season. I guess this serves as a de facto season preview. There's a lot to talk about. We don't have enough time to talk about every single thing, but obviously we definitely touch on the hot topics. I don't know, should we start with the individuals, should we start with the team oriented stuff, or what do you like? I don't know what makes the most sense.
Let's start with the team oriented stuff, and then we'll work our way into the individual. I mean, hey, it's the big one first, right? The Larry
OB. that makes sense. It's funny because like I think that I don't know, like in years past, we knew like every year, like it's going to be the Warriors and the Cavs, which it was a great 4-year series or whatever. But I think that once those teams broke up or whatever, I mean, we've seen the Warriors again in the finals two more times since then, whatever. But like there's really just this sense of it literally could be anybody going into the year. Obviously, they're top dogs, but we saw last year the Heat, you know, AC play-in tournament all the way to the NBA finals, and Nuggets are the ones that won. I think they were a team that we were like, we got to see them do it in the postseason. So to see that happen makes it cool. But that being said, looking at just the 20 teams because of the play-in tournament that made the playoffs last year, I think it's an interesting way to look at it is like, all right, how many of them will we see again in this postseason? Who's – and just like when you pick like a snub for the All-Stars, like, okay, if one of them is going to be out, who is going in? I'm looking at the West, and I wouldn't be surprised if it shapes out differently. But like I could see all the same 10 teams in the Western Conference back in there next year. I don't know if I'm tripping by saying that, but it does kind of feel like there's not going to be much moving in the West.
So you're feeling like Luka and Kyrie don't figure it out this year and they're still on the way out looking in?
maybe Steph has kind of gotten to me, our colleague who's been really anti-Mavericks. I'm kind of out on Dallas. I don't know what it is. Like, we know going into the year, Luka's already dealing with that calf injury. I don't know if that's going to set him back. Maybe he'll be fine. He dealt with a calf injury in the playoffs a couple years ago and looked just fine after about 2 weeks off. He's going to have 2 weeks off before the season starts. And last year, he started the season on a tear. But, you know, they're starting two rookies probably. I know you love Omax, Derek Lively. I think they're going to have a learning curve a little bit. They added Grant Williams, added Seth Curry. But I just don't know if when I look at the rest of the Western Conference, OKC got better, just the fact they added Chet and they got older. The Pelicans, if Zion's healthy, they got better. I don't know, man. I guess like Memphis falls down, right? Because Ja's out for the first 25 games of the year, but it feels like it's a bubble and Dallas gets squeezed out of it.
Yeah, it does kind of look that way. And I see like when you're painting that picture, how you would arrive to that. But there's part of me that still just kind of feels like maybe Luka and Kyrie figure this out. Yeah. And when they do, and if they do, they're going to be one of the most dangerous duos in the league. I know we saw like flashes of it last year, but at the same time, they had a short window to make that work. And the pieces around them weren't all that talented. Like it wasn't a team that was built to play around Kyrie and Luka. Like that almost kind of felt like a home run swing that Mark Cuban made on the fly at the trade deadline just because Kyrie was available. And he was going to find a way to make it work after. And then, you know, obviously at the end of the year there, they kind of intentionally tanked to make sure that they, you know, got a top draft pick. And they did get in trouble for it. I really like the draft the Mavs had. And I think those, you know, Lively and Omax could be impactful players. But at the same time, like, it's really hard for rookies to impact winning that way, especially two of them if they're both going to be in the starting lineup the way they had been in some preseason games. So, you know, the Mavs could be on the outside looking in. I had them kind of in that fringe playing range. But, you know, there's teams like the Pelicans, like you talked about, like if Zion is not able to stay healthy the way that he has not been able to stay healthy at any point in his career, you know, so far, like, are we sure that they're a guaranteed playing team? You know, I'm very big on the Kings this year. Like, again, I feel like what they did last year was very legit. So to me, you know, that's a team that a lot of people will probably say, oh, they're going to fall off. Maybe they're not a top six team. They're a fringe playing team this year or whatever, but I still have them firmly in my top six. In the Western Conference, just because of the things they can do on the offensive end and how, you know, how much firepower they have there. So, you know, like you said, then you're looking at teams like the Wolves, who are constructed to win now, technically.
Yeah.
The Warriors, who, you know, they're getting older, but they continue to prove that this dynasty is not over yet. You already mentioned OKC. I mean, the West is going to be a gauntlet this year, and I don't think there's any guarantees.
Yeah, one note on the Kings, like, and this is another big up to another one of our colleagues, Carlin Gale, will be proud to hear this, but like that division, right? Like the fact that the Kings are in the division with the Suns, Clippers, Warriors, Lakers, and I didn't really think about it, but all of those teams made the playoffs last year, right? They're like five teams from the Pacific Division, and I said this already, and this is no disrespect to the Kings, but like I think because their timeline. Because of how young Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox are, and you know, Keegan Murray, you expect him to take another leap this upcoming season. But like when you look at that division, it feels like the Kings are the only team in that division that wouldn't consider coming short of a title a failure this upcoming year. Like the Lakers, they have no choice but it's title or bust for the Lakers, the Clippers, the Suns, and the Warriors too, right? And that doesn't necessarily mean that those teams are championship caliber teams, but I think that just adds some pressure to just – you know, because that's 16 games that they play this upcoming year against those teams. So I think that adds intrigue. And I do want to circle back to the Pelicans, too, because I can't sit here in good faith and talk about Luka's calf injury and not acknowledge the fact that the Pelicans are banged up before the season even starts. You talk about Trey Murphy III is a guy who could be an X factor for them and take a big leap, but he's dealing with the meniscus injury. Jose Alvarado's got an injury issue that he's dealing with, and Najee Marshall's got an injury issue that he's dealing with. So like, these are like these key guys who obviously Zion and Brandon Ingram are you know, where everything starts and finishes. Haven't even really heard about CJ McCollum when you talk about that team, but they're a team that it feels like there's just a wider, I guess, margin that they need things to go right for them. But they are so talented. We saw them at the top of the Western Conference for, you know, 2 months last year. It does feel like they're maybe a piece away, but if they're able to just string together a healthy season, I think they're a problem regular season wise. And that could be a team who, if things go right, that's like a late high 40s, like early 50s type win team, which the same could be said for a lot of teams in the West.
Yeah, like you said, that was the pace they were on last year until Zion got hurt. I mean, they were at one point number one in the West. And then Zion went down with that injury and we didn't see him again for the rest of the season. And, you know, I think they kind of knew that that was something that they would potentially be dealing with when they took Zion number one overall. Obviously, yeah. Zion was going to be the number one overall pick. I'm not saying like, you know, hindsight's 2020 and they should have went with Ja Morant. Like, by no means am I saying that, but it is just something that it's become in his career of, you know, it's kind of a roll of the dice. And is he going to be able to stay healthy? And if he is, you're going to be, you know, they'll be a top six team in the West. I have no problem saying that. If Zion plays a full season, the Pelicans will be a top six team in the West because that good.
When you say full set, what do you think the benchmark should, like, they need him for like 60, like 58, 60 games, like, because 58 is like 70% of the season. Like, how much Zion do they need to stay in that top four in the West, let's say, or top six in the West?
You know, why don't we use the awards in All-NBA benchmark of 65 games, right? Like, 65? But that actually, that feels like a pretty, like, solid portion of the season. Like that's got to be what, three quarters of the way there. If you play 65 games, if they get 65 games Zion, you know, he's only missing 17 games at that point. They should still be a top six team in the West if he plays 65 games. If they aren't, then I would see that as a failure for the season. Like, you know, the play-in, if you were to play 65 games and there'd be a play-in team, that's a failure for the Pelicans. And, you know, you talk about different expectations for different teams. Like you said, the Kings, like, I think that's a great point. They're the only team in that division that it's champion. There, it's not championship or bust. Like, they finally snapped that playoff drought last year. Now the next step is winning a playoff series. They took the Warriors all the way to seven games. Steph had one of the greatest game seven performances that the NBA has ever seen, and they got knocked out of the playoffs. They still walk out with a standing ovation from the home crowd and a pat on the back from everybody that's watching because of what they accomplished. But, you know, if you look at the Mavericks, I don't even think that they should be that set with the roster that they have right now. They should be expected to be a top six team in the West. Even playing is kind of, you know, falling short of what they're expecting. So, you know, a lot of teams in the West with higher expectations than maybe they should have, and there's not enough space for all of them. So I'm very curious to see how it shakes out.
Yeah, one last thing on the Pelicans. They actually added James Borrego to that coaching staff, who was in Charlotte for some time, and he's being tasked with making their offense flow better. So if we see a boom offensively for that Pelicans team, again, it depends on their health, but, you know, that contrasting that with the Kings, like you said, like it's going to be linear growth for them. I think the Pelicans, this is year five for Zion. And like, because they've had so many shortcomings and due to injuries, they need to have higher aspirations and higher expectations. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the Western Conference with the Pelicans and all the teams. Cause it seems like there's just too much talent. And it's not to say that there isn't too much talent in the Eastern Conference, but I think it's just so much clearly tiered, and we talked about it a little bit last week with the heavy hitters in the Eastern Conference, but we didn't really talk about the teams who aren't necessarily in that range. And I think that it's a little more up in the air in the Eastern Conference, like who is in, who do you feel confident about? Even like what I mentioned with the Heat and what they did last year, it doesn't necessarily like instill confidence in what they're about to do this upcoming year. So I don't know, where do we even start in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the top six teams in the Eastern Conference, to me, I know you just said the Heat, and I in part agree with there's no guarantee what the Miami Heat look like this year, but I also think that at this point, they've kind of earned the benefit of the doubt.
That's true.
Like, I know they were a play-in team last year, and then they made that run, obviously, all the way to the NBA Finals, which is crazy, but like, I don't see them being a play-in team again this year. Like, in my opinion, the Bucks, the Celtics, right, as long as they're healthy. The Bucks, the Celtics, the 76ers, the Cavaliers, the Heat, and even the Knicks, to me, I think that's almost concrete that that's going to be the top six teams in the East. Obviously, the Nets snuck in there last year because they had half season of KD and Kyrie. I think there's going to be big things coming from Mikal Bridges this year. Ben Simmons has looked good in the preseason. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, that could be fool's gold. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Nick Claxton, really like what he brings on the defensive end. Like, that's a solid team. They play for each other. It's not, you know, there's no, you know, real alpha male in the room on that team. And I think that'll help contribute to their success. But they're a playing team, and I don't think they're a top six team in the East again this year. You know, teams like the Pacers are on the come up, and I'm high on the Pacers this year. I think they're going to be a playing team this year. But that means, you know, a team like the Bulls or the Raptors, like one of those teams are going to be on the way out. So, again, kind of like we're saying, there's not room for everybody. And the play-in tournament makes things really interesting because these fringe teams like the Pacers and the Magic are going to be contending for those spots. But who's coming out?
Yeah, I think that's interesting too, because like the Bulls, right? Like same way we were talking about, and I know like the Lonzo Ball injury, which has just been unfortunate, has like just kind of been a cloud over the franchise. And he last played, I think it was January 21, and that's things like the way that hearing him talk about that this offseason, I think it was on Trae Young's podcast, saying like it was the first time in his career he felt like he was on a team that really like was perfect. Perfectly tailored to him, which is kind of funny to hear him say it like that. But like he is literally the missing piece for this Bulls team, and they kind of doubled down on the trio of DeRozan and Vooch and LaVine. They added some pieces this offseason, but it's just interesting because they're kind of in no man's land, and it feels like it's a cycle every year where like Bulls fans get excited about, okay, maybe we can, you know, live up to kind of what our payroll and like what these vets should require this team to be or should call them to be. But then ultimately they just aren't really in the tier, you know, that they can like, and it's just crazy to kind of lump them in with, you know, teams like the Hawks and the Pacers. We mentioned the Magic a little bit last year as a team who could catch people by surprise if they're still on schedule with their development. But when I think about these teams, especially the ones that made it last year, the Raptors are interesting because I feel like that could go great or it could just like not it just falls off and we get really excited and they peak in the preseason. But the Bulls, I think, are the one that have the most question marks around them because I have no idea what to make of it.
And I also think that they're the closest to kind of what we were just talking about in the West of like unrealistic expectations. Like
The
Bulls' expectations are winning a playoff series, multiple playoff series, with the way that this roster is constructed around LaVine, DeMar, and Nikola Vucevic. But, you know, realistically, like, what is their ceiling? It's probably a first-round elimination. At least that's where I have them ranked right now. And, you know, maybe I'd be wrong, but I feel pretty confident in saying that. Whereas, like, you know, a team like the Raptors, like, I'm not going to go sit here and say the Raptors are winning a playoff series this year, but I think that, like, there's a little bit more unknown there. Where like a team like them or the Magic or the Pacers, like if things were to really click, then like, who knows, maybe they could pull off a first round upset or something like that. So, you know, maybe that sounds crazy. Maybe that I'm a little bit too high on some of the offseason moves and some of the young guys that these teams have coming up. But at the same time, like I would almost be more comfortable living in that unknown as like a Raptors or Pacers or Magic fan than I would as like a Bulls fan who it feels like your end of season is determined.
Yeah, I know hindsight is 2020, but looking back at what the Bulls that trade to get Vooch, who's been an all-star there, so like no disrespect to Vooch, but it was the pick that became Franz Wagner, Wendell Carter Jr., Otto Porter, and the pick that became Jet Howard for Nikola Vucevic. If you're Chicago, you kind of got to be a little upset by how that played out looking back at it.
I mean, who's going to win a playoff series first? The Magic or the Bulls?
That's wild to think. It's wild to think, but like, and it's crazy to think. I don't know when's the last time, and I have to look this up. I don't know off the top of my head. I know sometimes I probably could think through it, but the last time the Bulls won a playoff series, right? Like that would have had to have been what? Like, was it the year? It had to have been like, was that 2015 when LeBron made the game winner in the semifinals against them, when Derrick Rose made the game winner in game one and was like emotionless after? Like that might have been the last time they won a series. I know they were up 2-0 on the season 2017, but otherwise, like, they had a drought, and then they made it to the playoffs. And I'm sure they would have gone differently had Lonzo been healthy. But that's wild for a franchise that's won six championships to kind of be where they are now. Like, it's tough. They're betting on Patrick Williams hitting this year, and I've been waiting on that for a while. So, Charlotte guy, we'll see if he can do that.
Yeah, and I don't think it actually even registered in my mind that the Bulls have not won a playoff series since the Derrick Rose days. I mean, like, you know, even as someone that follows Celtics very closely – I'd be the first to admit that, you know, C's were down 2-0 and Rondo gets hurt and then they come back and win that series. If Rondo didn't get hurt, the Bulls probably win that series and that's where they get that win. But, I mean, it's been a minute and Bulls fans are agonizing. I mean, you know, we work closely with a couple Bulls fans. I follow a couple Bulls fans on Twitter and it always just feels like it's dark times on the timeline for the Bulls fans. So, you know, they're right there in that tier with the Hawks and the Nets. And I mean, they're going to be on the fringe this year, but, you know, they could easily be supplanted by some of these younger teams that are on the come up.
Just put that in perspective and wrap that up a little bit. Since 2012-13, Bulls have been to the playoffs four times. They lost in the semis in 2013, and 2015 was the last series they won. So that's when Tibbs was the guy. And then they went to the playoffs with Fred Hoiberg. Forgot he coached there for a while. And now they're going into year four with Billy Donovan. So it's pretty crazy how that goes. I guess we could switch real quick, switch gears to the individual stuff. I know we have something coming over at the Sporting News on our awards picks. Kyle, you and I agree on a few, so I guess we can just talk about the ones we agree on real quick. Both have Jokic MVP. Both have Victor Wembanyama, Rookie of the Year. Both have Shea as the scoring champ this year as well. So I guess I don't know if there's anything to say about any of those three. I think that the interesting one for me is Victor Wembanyama as Rookie of the Year, because it kind of felt like conventional wisdom, we wanted to go against it and be like, oh, it could be Scoot, it could be, you know, Chet. But at the end of the day, we just kind of went back to it being Vic. So I don't know, like, what made you kind of just stick with the top, I guess, the favorite?
Well, I've been saying ever since draft day too, you know, when people are texting me and like, oh, what do you like here? What do you like there? My favorite pick, if your sports book offers it, is the field against Victor Wembanyama for Rookie of the Year. Mm-hmm. Even though I just picked him as Rookie of the Year. And I think that, again, if he plays, you know, enough games, he'll win Rookie of the Year. It just feels like, you know, he could roll his ankle slightly and they're going to keep him out for a couple of weeks just because, you know, they want to ensure that he stays as healthy as possible. Like, they know this is more of a long-term picture than it is immediately him dominating in his rookie season. If he's on the floor, he's going to dominate. He's going to win Rookie of the Year. But all it takes is one slight tweak, and all of a sudden, you know, guys like Scoot Henderson are looking pretty good. Chet Holmgren is another one who's kind of in that fake rookie year, same way that we saw from guys like Ben Simmons, Blake Griffin, who, you know, after a full season around an NBA facility and, and training and diet and everything like that, you know, film study, everything, it gives you a massive advantage in these types of award races. So, you know, Chet Holmgren's going to be a popular pick that starts popping up. But I still really like Scoot Henderson, especially after Damian Lillard has been traded, as someone who could really, you know, kind of contend with Victor Wembanyama for rookie of the year. I think I said it last week on the pod, like he's one of the most NBA ready prospects in this class. He's played two full seasons of pro basketball and done so successfully. So, you know, he, again, in that routine and in work ethic and NBA level practices over at the G League Ignite and stuff like that, that's really going to set Scoot Henderson up for success as well. But, you know, at the end of the day, ultimately Victor Wembanyama, he's tabbed as, you know, the next best prospect since LeBron James for a reason. And that's because if he's on the floor, he's going to be that good.
Yeah, I'm trying to think too, like when we saw about, when we talk about those guys, like it's going to be a lot of Chet, a lot of Scoot, a lot of Vic, whole lot of Vic. But I'm trying to think, I guess Malcolm Brogdon notwithstanding, because that was like a weird situation, but like it feels like Michael Carter-Williams is like the only like real like sleeper rookie of the year that we've had in recent memory. Is there anybody in this class you think could like, because situation means a lot, like as far as that goes, as far as like where they are and like who, like what they can do in year one. But I don't know if there's anybody that like it could even fit that bill.
Yeah, I mean, you said Malcolm Brogdon. He came to mind immediately as someone, I mean, second round pick. He's what, the only second round pick to win rookie of the year in NBA history. But, you know, aside from that, it usually is one of the top dogs. And I mean, we talked about Vic. We talked about Scoot. We talked about Chet Holmgren. Like outside of those three, I'm not exactly sure who would even really, like Jairus Walker is someone who pops up in my mind who I really like this year. I just don't know if the playing time is going to be there. You know, Brandon Miller, obviously in Charlotte, he was the number two overall pick. Think his name would be popping up a little bit more, but again, it's like, you know, what's playing time going to look like in Charlotte? And then, you know, I mean, Amen and Asar Thompson, they're both really talented players. I really like what they bring to the table. I think they could be key pieces on those teams as they try and win more games than they did last year. But at the same time, like, is the volume going to be there for them to put up rookie of the year caliber numbers? So maybe there's someone that sneaks in there that ends up taking on a bigger role that we didn't expect. But as of right now, like, it really does kind of feel like a three-horse race between those three.
Absolutely. I was going to mention the Thompson twins too. And it's interesting because they're kind of like in similar-ish situations. Obviously, I know Detroit and Houston are not competing for much this year, or we don't expect them to anyway. But they're two teams that just have a bunch of young guys. And it kind of feels like, are they all going to be on the same page and develop together? Are they going to kind of like cannibalize each other's growth? So I think that kind of ultimately limits those guys. Cool to see that we agree on Shea being score champ too. Maybe he eats into Chet's rookie of the year case. One thing we did disagree on though, DPOY is so hard to predict. I had Bam, you had AD. Is he going to play enough to get it? I guess that's a big question.
Yeah, that is the, you know, number one magic question for Anthony Davis. I mean, he's never won a Defensive Player of the Year award, which, like, you know, is pretty crazy to think. But then again, when you look at the injury history, it makes sense that he's never won the award because he hasn't played enough games to win the award. I mean, he's led the league in blocks three times. He's been known as one of the best rim protectors in the NBA ever since he stepped foot on the court. But, you know, can he get to that 65-game benchmark? That is going to be the toughest question. You know, I picked him to win Defensive Player of the Year because that's me banking on Anthony Davis having a clean bill of health and the Lakers being one of the best defenses in the league anchored by him. It feels a little weird to me that he hasn't won the award yet. And I feel like that's an award that he would, you know, want to get. Like that would mean something to him to add to his list of accolades for his entire career, you know, a Hall of Fame level career. But, you know, you said Bam Adebayo, like he's another name that I considered. Obviously, like Jaren Jackson is the reigning DPOY and he's one of the best shot blockers in the league. So he's always going to be in the mix. And then you have the guys in Milwaukee that, you know, you talk about cannibalizing each other for the award, like Brook Lopez and Giannis Antetokounmpo almost feel like they're kind of eating into each other because, you know, I mean, they always have one of the league's top defenses, but how do you give the award to both of them? You can't. So it kind of defers to somebody else. So I'm sticking with AD as my pick. I feel confident about it if he gets to that 65 game mark, but, you know, that's a trick question there.
Yeah, I was surprised when we were looking at some of the odds that Brook Lopez was such kind of a long shot. He was a runner-up last year. And, you know, not to knock on him, but I think he and Giannis will be cleaning up a lot of Dame's messes this upcoming season. AD was awesome defensively. That could help them. That could help them, right?
It could help them, right?
So, you know, now they don't have Drew all with them. So now that kind of helps one of their cases anyway. AD was awesome defensively. He really was like I think that because of his defensive presence, he was the best player on the floor for the majority 3 at the time. They were in the playoffs until they took on the Nuggets, which we'll get to a little bit after a quick break. But I went with Bam just kind of by default. I picked him, I think, last year as well, or maybe 2 years ago, but I picked him before. He kind of set that goal, and I think we talk about the Heat's success. A lot of it depends on him anchoring everything, especially if he is the one constant with them. And he'll be cleaning up a little bit of Tyler Hero's messes as well. So I think that's interesting. Last thing I'll talk about, we'll touch on real quick. You and I both have Villanova guys as most likely first-time All-Star. I went with Jalen Brunson, who just missed it last year. You went with Mikal Bridges. Is he going to average? How much do you think? I'm just going to say, how much do you think he'll average for a year? He averaged like, what, 26 and a half after the deadline? What do you think he's going to average a game this upcoming season?
Yeah, he was at 26 points per game after the deadline last year, which is crazy. I mean, wow. You know, just to share with the audience, I mean, I worked very closely with Mikal Bridges and Jalen Brunson at Villanova the year they won the national championship in 2018. It's been crazy to watch them both develop the way that they have in the NBA. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a huge fan of both of them after seeing their work ethic up close and everything like that. But like, never did I once imagine that we'd be talking about, you know, both of them being potential all-stars. Like, I thought they'd be guys that would have long careers in the NBA as, you know, contributing role players, starters, everything like that. But like, the way that Jalen Brunson and Mikal Bridges have grown their game is absolutely crazy from what I saw in college. And never would I have thought Mikal would have been a player who's averaging 26 points per game in the NBA, you know, as a number one scoring option, ball in his hands at all times, creating for himself off the dribble. Like, it's ridiculous to see that. And, you know, I'm rooting for him this year to have an all-star caliber season. It feels like if the Nets are going to, like we said, kind of contend for a top six spot in the East the way they were last year, you know, sticking in that playing range, whatever it is, he's going to have to be that good because, you know, he's, where else are they going to get the points from? I mean, obviously Spencer Dinwiddie can help out there as well, but the other guys are kind of, you know, they're not really top scoring options. So the ball's going to be in his hands. I like his chances of averaging north of 20 points per game. And I think if he does that, he'll be an all-star. So that's kind of where I landed on that. But Jalen Brunson's a great pick too, man. I mean, I thought he had a strong case to be the guy over Julius Randle last year.
So many guards in the East.
That's the tough part. You know, it wasn't even necessarily him against his own teammate. It's him against the other guards in the East. And when it came down to it, it was easier to put Randle in as a forward. So I think that's kind of how it went down. But I'd be shocked if it's not Brunson this year, too. I feel like they're both pretty good picks.
And I must say, that's nothing against Randle, because he was like one of a handful of players to put up the average that he averaged last year. I couldn't tell you exactly what it was. I know it's like over 24 points, like 8 or 9 boards and 5 assists. But I'm expecting him to take a step back this year. I'm not blaming it on the Skechers, but it might be him playing, going from Nike to Skechers. We haven't seen anybody do it yet, so we'll see if he can put an all-NBA season together in Skechers. And for Mikal Bridges, I think just to put up on what we talked about with the Nets, they're going to be an annoying team. I think they're just, with everybody that they have, they're going to be like, a sneaky candidate for the next couple summers as like a team who can cash in a lot of chips, especially because they got rid of superstars and got superstar hauls for them and bring a star in that come play in New York City, and they have a good foundation there, and they're led by Jacques Vaughn. So I think that that's the one thing that they have going for them. Now, we'll come back after a quick break. We'll talk a little more about things are going on around the NBA and preview the opening week slate in the NBA, because there's a lot of good ones to talk about. So catch you in a second. All right, so keeping up with the pulse and what's going on around the league, I feel like we do this every offseason. You and I are always like, either whether it's on Twitter or on Slack messages or on Instagram, we're sending each other uniform leaks. And I guess we see now the NBA players see them too. Kyle Kuzma responded to the LA Clippers City Edition leak, and he says, Nike is ruining the nostalgia of jerseys. Every year it's a new jersey, and what gets lost in its brand identity. Seems kind of harsh, but maybe he's not all the way wrong. Kyle, first of all, did you see the uniforms he was responding to? And what is your take on Kyle Kuzma's take?
I stand with Kyle Kuzma, man. I mean, I really do. Like, when's the last time you've like seen an alternate jersey that you like really, truly love? The only one I can think of is the Suns Digicamo. Like, yeah, I love those Valley jerseys. Ones. Those are like one of my favorite NBA jerseys I've ever seen. But like, aside from that, I'm sure there are others that have like popped up that I'm like, oh yeah, those are pretty nice. But then they're gone in a year, and then they replace them with like newer ones that just aren't even as good and like hardly ever have the team colors involved with them, or maybe the team colors have changed a little bit. Like, I feel Kuz on this. And you know, these players are forced to wear these jerseys in big games and on national TV and in big moments and stuff. And it's like, you know, what about when the Celts play the Lakers and they just wear green and gold? Like, what, you know what I mean? Like, I
think we're getting old.
We are. I know. It is very like old man yells at cloud, but I'm kind of just like, let's stick to the classics, man. I don't know if you feel the same way, but these jersey leaks are getting worse and worse every year.
I'm on both sides of it because I do think it's funny. Like, there's one thing, like, of course, Kyle Kuzma, guy who was a Nike athlete, now a Puma athlete, is on Twitter using this platform to criticize Nike a little bit. I think that's funny. On the other part, I think it's funny. He's definitely wearing the Wizards City uniform from last year in his profile picture, the cherry blossom ones.
Yeah, sure.
That being said, it's tough because a lot of these leaks are always like these like retail, like swingman jerseys that don't look as good as the authentics, but then it's like, you want the fans to buy this, and like we get these shots of them that don't look great. And you made a good point. Like, it's hard to think about the stuff that you like because it's here today and it's gone by the end of the year, and you can't really remember, was this season's, was this the statement or the city edition? And then it's funny, like, I think that like they should kind of like the same way certain like college conferences protect like rivalries. I think, like you said, like Celtics Lakers, when it's in Boston, the Celtics should be wearing white, Lakers should be wearing purple. When it's in LA, Lakers should be wearing gold, Celtics should be wearing green. Like, yeah, maybe it's not as big of a deal when like the Thunder are playing against the Bulls or something like that. But like, you know, when you have these rivalries, like NBA has rivalry week, let's have rivalry week look the way it's supposed to look. Otherwise, like, it's cool. Like, I understand what they're doing. And sometimes they do have some hits. I know we've seen a leak of like the Raptors got like a little gold pinstripe situation going on. It'll be cool to see actual footage of those. But it's an interesting conversation that even goes back, thinking back to when the Cavaliers pull off the first 3-1 upset in NBA Finals. We'll always think about black sleeved uniforms are associated with one of the greatest moments in NBA history.
Superstition is crazy, man. I mean, it plays into everything. Like, I mean, we had a moment earlier in that year where LeBron was literally trying to rip the sleeves off of his jersey because he was so uncomfortable in those t-shirt jerseys, all the way down to the 2016 Finals, where, like you said, that's going to be associated with that run for the rest of eternity because, you know, they caught fire in those jerseys and that's what they decided to wear. I understand, like, it's more for the kids and stuff. And like you said, we are getting older. So it's like, you know, we're not exactly the target market that's buying these, like, you know, jerseys that they're switching out in and out every year. But at the same time, like you said, like, you know, keep the old head, not that I'm gonna sit here and call this old heads, but like, keep the old heads pleased by at least keeping the jersey matchups like stock standard for, you know, the marquee matchups, like you said, the Celtics Lakers, Celtics, you know, 76ers. If, you know, the Bulls and Jazz are facing off, like, let's, you know what I mean, they can bring back their throwback jerseys and the Bulls can rock theirs. Like, I don't know, they can kind of switch it up. So I don't know, maybe it's not as big of a deal as we're making it, but I stand with Kuz.
The last thing I would say on this, and the one thing I do appreciate, is like when the teams who both are introducing classic uniforms in the same season, they wear them against each other. That's really cool. I don't care who's home away this time. I know the Hornets are bringing back the double pinstripes this year, which they wore during like my era of Hornets fanhood when I was like, I think they wore them from like when I was like 3 until we moved to New Orleans in 2002. But like, if they played against like the Wolves, who have like their throwbacks, like, that's cool. Like, now you feel like you kind of went in the time machine and you're seeing, I don't care if the game's in Minnesota or in Charlotte, like, that's cool. Otherwise, stick to tradition. So we'll see. And again, we'll see these actual uniforms when they're actually unveiled, and maybe we'll change our stance, and maybe we'll change our stance on here too.
Yeah, I mean, they usually look better once they're actually on court, and like when they do like the official team shoot and everything like that. Every time that they're like taken, you know, hanging from, you know, the coat rack of a Dick's Sporting Goods, like, they always look terrible because the lighting's off and you can't see the details and everything like that. So maybe I shouldn't be so quick to just throw them off to the side. But I had a social media moment that I wanted to bring up that, you know, kind of went hand in hand with, you know, something that you and I were sending back and forth to each other. And that was Grady Dick making his first appearance kind of in a Drake music video. He didn't exactly crack Drake's music video for one of the songs on the new album or anything like that. But Drake's son had a birthday and he released his first ever published song, My Man Freestyle. And I can't be the only one that's still just sitting there going, my man. It's just stuck in my head for some reason. But Grady Dick pops up on the podium in between Drake and his son Adonis, doesn't say a single word, just kind of says it, stands there and bobs his head. And you know what? I feel like when he was drafted and he said, you know what, Drake, like, we got to link up. He just followed me, everything like that. He was all excited about it. I don't know if this is exactly what he had in mind, but if Drake calls, Grady Dick's there to answer.
100%. It's funny, like, when I watched the music video, and again, I was, you know, I'm tuning in, like, I'm Adonis got a catchy tune going for him, and they like show him at the podium first before they pan out, and I'm like, okay, cool, like, they're at the OVO Athletic Center, this is cool, like, you know, kind of take your kid to work because it's the OVO Athletic Center, and then you see Grady Dick, and I'm like, this is hilarious because one, I know how excited he was to be a part of it. It didn't matter what he had going on. He dropped everything to be in a 6-year-old's debut music video. And two, it like kind of feels like rookie duties that he just doesn't look at as rookie duties. And I pointed it out to you when we talked about this before, which is really mind blowing, is that like, he's closer in age to Adonis, who you mentioned his birthday, just celebrated his 6th birthday, to Drake, who's about to turn 37. Grady Dick will be 20 in November. And it's just kind of funny because, like, in your mind, this guy's in the NBA now, but it makes sense that he's so goofy and youthful.
When you said that, that completely blew my mind. Like, to the point where, like, you had me Googling Adonis's age, Googling Drake's age, and then Googling Grady Dick's age because I didn't believe you. I was like, there's no way that he could be closer to the 6-year-old than he is to, you know, the artist who is the one that reached out to him to be in the music video. But when you and I talked about this at first, too, you would kind of mention something along the lines of, like, rookie duties where you're like, you know, he probably could have got Scotty, but Scotty's already been in the league for a couple of years. He's like, yeah, man, yeah. I'm not going to be in your son's music video. But he calls Grady Dick, and Grady Dick immediately is like, yeah, you know, tell me when to get down to the OVO Athletic Center. I'll be there. I'll be in the video, anything you need. So, I mean, hey, I'm sure it's for anybody that, and I'm sure most Raptors fans at this point have seen the mix of Grady Dick TikTok videos that he made at Kansas last year. The guy's an absolute clown, and I say that in the best way possible. There is surely more Grady Dick content to come throughout the entire season. I'm looking forward to all of it.
100%. I think that's going to be really fun. The way that Raptors fans loved Scotty Barnes during his rookie year, and you picked it up when you were at draft night when he got drafted, and like it was an immediate type thing. And I think it'll be a similar situation. And on the basketball side, I'll be curious to see, you know, what kind of role he carves for himself. But he does answer a major need, and he can shoot the ball. And I think the big thing that they talked about with him, he's more than just a shooter. So, you know, when you check all the boxes on and off the court, you're a perfect fit. So I think that what I mentioned earlier, the vibes in Toronto do seem better. And I mentioned, I feel like I've said this like 4 or 5 times now. And that's a big part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, new head coach, rotation is going to be a little bit different. I'm curious to see the way they operate on offense because, you know, that's obviously been a huge issue for the Raptors over the last couple seasons, just getting stagnant in the half court. It feels like they brought in some pieces to try and loosen things up and get the wheels turning. They've talked about point Scotty, which is a position that he played coming into the NBA. I mean, he was a 6th man at Florida State, right. Did a lot of ball handling when he was there. I thought, you know, he'd jump into that role right away in the NBA, but Nick Nurse didn't really deploy him as much as I had maybe thought in that role. It sounds like Darko Rajakovic is ready to get him out there, get the ball in his hands, and see what he can do. So I'm looking forward to seeing that too.
Yeah, absolutely. And Raptors get their season going next, I guess, depending on when you're hearing this, Wednesday, October 25th. They have the Timberwolves, we just talked about, in town. Former Raptors assistant Chris Finch and the Timberwolves in town to take on the Raptors 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday. And that'll be one of the 4 games that we'll get our previews and picks for, but we'll start with opening night. I have one question about one game, and then we'll get through all the rest of them. Lakers Nuggets to start the rare double West Coast doubleheader, followed by Suns Warriors. Been a lot of trash talk between the Lakers and Nuggets. I'm curious what you think about it, because the Lakers went out of their way to talk about it at media day. I didn't think that much about what the Nuggets were saying, but obviously it struck a nerve. So for these 2 games and then 2 other games I'll go with the next day, who you got winning and who is the leading scorer of each game?
Ooh, okay. Well, I am going to ride with the Nuggets. And I know that, you know, picking the team that's getting their rings on ring night is not always the best thing to do because there's a lot of emotion involved with that. It's tough to reshift your focus once a game starts. But I still think that, you know, this is their chance to prove a point that, hey, this was not a fluke. This is not a one-time thing. Like you said, there was a lot of trash talk back and forth. You said you thought it was a little odd that the Lakers went out of their way to bring it up on media day. I mean, Mike Malone was still talking about the Lakers series at the parade after the Nuggets won. So there's clearly some bad blood and ill will on both sides there. And I think both of these teams really want it. But I do think that Nikola Jokic, you know, fresh off of spending a summer riding horses and doing whatever else he does that isn't basketball, is going to be back with a vengeance to prove that he's still the best player in the world. On the other side of it, you said Suns and Warriors. It is a little odd that it's a double West Coast doubleheader.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like the Suns are coming out to prove a point. Like, they want to make sure that it's known that, you know, obviously they're not the deepest team in the NBA. People talked about their depth concerns all offseason, but Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal are here to prove that they are the best trio in the NBA. I'm sure they truly think that, and you know, going out and doing it against the Warriors team that just won the championship 2 years ago, still has a lot of those pieces. They have championship aspirations as well. That's a good way to go out and try and prove that, you know, the Suns are going to be as good as everybody feels like they can be on paper.
Yeah, I'm with you on that Nuggets pick. Poor Lakers, by the way. I mean, poor Lakers. But second straight year, they got to watch a ring ceremony. Last year, they were in Golden State, and they lost to the Warriors on opening night. So now they're in Denver. I think the Nuggets, like you said, Jokic is a little too much for them. I'm expecting a big Jamal Murray night, so I'll take it with that. But I'm going to go opposite with you on the second game. I'm taking the Warriors over the Suns. They're at home. They were pretty much unbeatable at home last year, except for a few random games they lost. And I also think Chris Paul is going to do every single thing in his power to not lose to the team that traded him away. If I know anything about Chris Paul, he's going to be in true like Chris Paul form. So I'm taking the Warriors in that one. Now, the other two games we're going to talk about, first we can talk Raptors, Timberwolves, and the other one is Victor Wembanyama's debut against the Mavericks we talked about earlier in the show. I guess a better question would be who's going to be more impressive between Vic and Luka, but what do you think of those two games?
Well, I'm going to start with the Wembanyama debut, because once you told me that was something that we're going to be talking about, I went to look and I was like, I feel like Luka probably had a big game, his first ever NBA game. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, the guy had won MVPs in the EuroLeague. Like, he's been here before, similarly right. The same way that Victor Wembanyama has. And I looked it up. Luka went for 10 points, 8 boards, 4 assists, 4 turnovers, and a 21-point loss to the Suns in his first ever NBA game. So the bar is not exactly set high for Victor Wembanyama going up against what Luka did in his debut. But at the same time, I mean, the Spurs could easily get blown out in the same way that the Mavs did on Luka's first ever NBA game. I expect Vic to have, you know, much better outing than I just said of what Luka Doncic had. He's been awesome in the preseason. Obviously, preseason success doesn't necessarily translate to regular season success, but Wemby looks polished. He looks ready. He looks revitalized after a long summer. You know, I don't really think that he was ever on his A game in summer league the way that people wanted him to be.
Yeah.
We're starting to see how good he can be in the preseason already, and I think he's ready to show everybody in his debut.
Yeah, I agree with you on Wemby having a good game. I think that goes back to what we talked about with the Mavericks and their weaknesses in the front court. Wemby is probably going to feast a little bit, especially it's also a home game for them as well. And we've seen it in the preseason. It's going to be crazy. I can't wait to see later in the week what type of viewership records that game breaks. And it's also wild to think in retrospect, because everybody's going to compare it to LeBron's debut, which was kind of a one-of-a-kind debut. They also lost to that game, but he had a pretty crazy stat line. That game was played at 10:30 Eastern time. I can't believe how much viewership they like just whiffed on by having LeBron James play in his first ever NBA game like super late. They barely have games that late now, but you know, San Antonio and the Mavs, 9:30 p.m. Wednesday, October 25th. And the other one, I'm going to take the Raptors taking care of business on opening night. I just think it'll be a Pascal Siakam type game. The Timberwolves still, like you mentioned on paper, they're exciting. They're cool or whatever, but I think they're going to start because Cat was gone for so much of last season. I still think that they're still learning each other. And I think the Timberwolves are going to be an okay team this upcoming year. But I think they're going to be a type of team that kind of figures it out maybe a month in. So I'm taking the Raptors and the Pascal Siakam night.
I'll tell you one thing. We're going to right away see that Jakob Poeltl earned every dollar in this contract opening night, because, I mean, that's a tough test. I mean, he's going up against both Rudy and Karl Anthony Towns on opening night. Yeah. I'm expecting big things from Anthony Edwards, though. I feel like, you know, if he is going to come out and have the season that everyone's expecting him to have coming off of the run that he had with Team USA and really trying to establish himself as one of the best players in this league. It starts on opening night, and I feel like the Timberwolves are going to get it done because of that. I think Ant's going to have a huge game, 30-plus points. It just kind of feels like this is his moment to show everybody, hey, I'm the guy that you think that I am. So, you know, I mean, that might fall tough on the Raptors for their first game of the season. I also think that they're going to be a team that's going to have to click a little bit with a new head coach, new rotation, everything like that. So, you know, I'm going to give the edge to the Timberwolves on that one.
And of course, in true Gil fashion, I think this might be why they schedule this game. It's the McDaniels Bowl. Jaden versus Jalen McDaniels on opening night. I mean, come on, like that don't let all this other stuff distract you from the fact that we got the McDaniels brothers going head to head. And I'm sure the reason I'm thinking about that is because Jalen McDaniels is probably going to get tasked with guarding Anthony Edwards for a little bit on opening night. So we'll see how that goes. Plenty to talk about now. The NBA season is here, and I can't be more excited to talk about it here on NBA Sound System. So there'll be more for us to get into next week once the season is underway, and we'll have plenty of storylines to react to from opening night and opening week. I'm sure there'll be more tweets and more drama around the league, and we'll be here to cover it all. Thanks again for tuning in to NBA Sound System. Please make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and we'll be right back here the same time next week. And as always, I will be again joined by Kyle Irving. For KI, my name is Gil McGregor. We will catch you next week.